Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Veg Grower Podcast. My name's Richard and I am on a mission to grow all my fruit, vegetables and herbs in my allotment and my garden, and I hope to inspire more people to grow their own food as well. Now, coming up this week, I have created a herbal tea bed here in my garden. I've also taken a visit to an RHS garden called Hyde Hall, and I pop to the allotment. That's all coming up today, so come meet me outside and I'll talk to you about this herbal tea bed. Now, you may or may not be aware, but on a Sunday night, I do a live stream. This is a chance for a group of gardeners to get around a computer and chat about gardening. We try and have a subject each week. But something I always try and do is get the audience to set me a challenge to do throughout the week and show it off the following week. It's a bit of fun, and it's something that I think we all do quite like doing. Now, this week, the challenge was set by Chef Scott, and he came up with the idea for me to make a herbal tea bed. I've got to say, I thought this was a really great idea, a great challenge, and something that I could set up in my back garden. Now, I spent the next few days just trying to work out what I could do, and something that I recognised that I could use was this Belfast sink that was given a few weeks ago. Now, a friend of ours is renovating an old pub, and he removed this Belfast sink from the pub, but he was told to smash it up and get rid of it. Instead, he offered it to us. He did have permission. It wasn't stolen or anything, but he offered it to us to use for in our garden. We already had two other Belfast sinks, and this brought us up to three. Now, I did have to give it quite a good wash. It's been sat outside for a few weeks, so it's been washed quite a bit with the rain, but I just hit it with a bit of a pressure washer just to make sure it was thoroughly cleaned and no contaminants left inside it. The drain, of course, the plug hole is clear and it is good to rock and roll. We made sure that was all ready to go. There are a few marks on this sink that I would have liked to get rid of, but not necessarily urgent. Now, the next thing I had to do was fill this Belfast sink up with compost. Now, I used a 50 litre bag of multi-purpose compost, and into that I mixed in 15 litres of coir compost as well. Now, it could probably do with a little bit more compost, if I'm honest with you. It is a little bit low, but it is enough and I'm quite happy with it. The idea behind the use of multi-purpose compost and a mix of coir is just so it has a bit more texture, something to hold it all together and hopefully promote the growth of our herbs. Now, this is going to be fine. There's plenty of nutrients in this compost, so we don't have to add anything else to it just yet, but that may come up in the future. Now, the next thing I needed to do was the herbs that we could use for the tea. And I did quite a bit of research and made a long list of all the herbs that we could possibly use. A lot of the research I found is that a lot of these herbal teas had medicinal purposes, be it relaxation or memory loss and things like that, that these herbs are meant to help with. Now, I really didn't want to go down the herbal medicinal route. I just wanted to stick with herbal teas. So I kind of ignored that, but pretty much all of them were listed as medicinal benefits. I'm not a doctor, so I don't really want to get into that. I just wanted to make some good tasting teas. I tend not to drink tea. I'm more of a coffee drinker. Now, anyway, with my list created, I went out into my garden to see which of the herbs that I could spare in the garden were on this list. And there was only one herb that I had to spare in the garden, and that was lemon balm. So I put that to one side, and then I headed off to one of our local garden centres. Now, it is still quite early in the season for plants and garden centres, so the choice of herbs that they had in stock was a little limited. But I managed to get four herbs that I could use. I brought these home, and I set to work at planting them out. My first herb was rosemary, which is one of my favourite herb plants anyway. I usually have quite a few herb plants growing all over the garden, but they have slowly been getting a bit woody, a bit old. So it was time to start thinking about refreshing our herb plants anyway. I could have taken some herb cuttings, but because I was set this challenge, I had to make it right away. Now, what I did with this rosemary plant is I planted it towards the back of this sink. Rosemary can get quite big and it can shade out some of the sun for some of the other plants. So I wanted it towards the back where it's not going to shade out every plant. I should say I placed this sink just outside my kitchen, so it's in a good location for where we're going to need it in the future. The next plant I planted was sage, which again, I wanted that towards the back of a sink for the same reason. Again, sage, I do actually have a few plants in locations in my garden, but they, again, are getting a little bit old and a little bit woody. So with a few changes we're making in the garden this year, that may be one that needed to come out anyway. Now, towards the front, I've planted out a creeping thyme. This is a red creeping thyme. Thyme is good for making teas as well. But what I wanted to do with this creeping thyme is also to have it sort of creeping over the compost and over the front of the sink so that it spills over the front and just creates a bit of interest and uses the space quite nicely. This has been another really good herb that I've used many, many times in the past. One of my favourites, once again. So far these herbs are nothing really special, and probably herbs that you already have in your garden. Now this brings me up to my next two plants. The first one being Moroccan mint. Now, I've got plenty of mint plants growing in various locations in my garden once again. I love mint, absolutely delicious. It can be quite invasive, but Moroccan mint is meant to be one of the best mints for making tea. So this is specifically for making a mint tea. But because it can be quite invasive, if I planted it straight into this sink, it would soon swamp out the entire sink. In fact, one of my other Belfast sinks, that's all it has into it, is a garden mint. So what I've done with this Moroccan mint is I've actually planted it into a bigger pot, and then I've planted that pot into the sink as well. And I've done the same with the lemon balm too. Planted that into a pot to get in the sink and leave it to grow. Now, there are many more herbs that I wanted to use and I had on my list, including chamomile, lavender and feverfew. But unfortunately, they're just not available at the moment in garden centres. We could sow some seeds, but again, that's going to take time. And it's something we can add in at the future. As this grows, we've still got a bit of space that we can just add in a few more of these herb plants. Now, moving forward, what we need to do is just wait for these plants to establish and start to grow. And as soon as they do that, we can then start harvesting some of these plants. Now, by harvesting, we're effectively pruning these plants as we go, which is what I want to do to try and control the size of these plants and stop them from going woody. Things like rosemary and sage, we have to harvest quite regularly just to stop the plants from growing that horrible woody state. It's not too difficult to do if you eat plenty of herbs, but if you're making them in a tea, that should also help as well. Now, talking of making teas, all we've got to do when we want to make a herbal tea is just pick a few of the herbs that we want, pop them in a teapot with a bit of hot water, leave it to steep for a few minutes, and then pour into a cup and enjoy. I don't always drink tea. I'm more of a coffee drinker, but if these taste good, then I think we could be onto something in the future. I have dabbled in herbal teas in the past, but they've gone by the wayside lately, but it's something we are moving back into. Now, coming back to the care for these plants, in the future, the compost will need a bit of a mulch with fresh compost from time to time, probably about a year, once a year. Now, this will help to add plenty of nutrients to the compost and feed some of our plants. But because these plants are in a container, although it be a sink, they're going to rely on us for feed and water. Regular watering is definitely going to be needed, and feed with a plant feed that is suitable for herbs. Chicken manure pellets is probably what I would use because that's going to promote the leafy growth, which is what we really want from our herbs. So the herbal tea bed is now set up and ready to go. And I'd like to know from you what herbs you would use for herbal tea. Right, let's find out what's been going on in the Supporters Club this week. Well, I hope you are enjoying this podcast so far. If you are, then perhaps you would be good enough just to take a few seconds to leave a rating and review. It only takes a few seconds, but by leaving a rating and review, you help more people discover this podcast, as well as give me some important feedback. And once again, we've had a couple more comments left on Spotify. Harry says, it's a great show and please keep up the good work. Don't worry, and will be doing this for a very, very long time. I love producing these podcasts. And Lynn has also recommended a variety of chickens called the cream leg bar after our new chickens that we got. Certainly sounds like a very, very good choice of chickens. Now, talking of chickens, we are still running the competition where you could win tickets to Gardeners World Spring Fair at Bewley in May. There is, of course, a blog post on our website if you want to find out more about that. Please do go and check that out. But if you are really enjoying this podcast, then please also consider becoming a member of our Supporters Club. By becoming a member of the Supporters Club, you help keep the wheels running on this podcast. It really does help me keep things going smoothly. To be a member, I charge just £5 a month, but for that £5 a month, you get extra behind-the-scenes podcasts, as well as a collection of seeds sent to your door every month, and these seeds can be sown in that very month. This week, we have actually sown some tomato seeds and some pea seeds, just to give you an example of what we do amongst the club. If you want to find out more about that, please head to thevegrowerpodcast.co.uk. Right, it's time now to head to RHS Hyde Hall to find out about my trip up there. One of the things that I absolutely love to do is to go out and visit gardens. And this week I've taken a visit to RHS Hyde Hall, which is in Essex, as I'm sure many of you are aware, which of course means I have to meet up with my good buddy, an Essex lad.
Hey, Lee Connolly, the Skinny Jean Gardener.
This is actually something that we try and do every so often. It's a little bit windy, so I apologise for that. But every now and then we try and meet up. Well, we meet up quite regularly, but we do try and visit gardens when we do meet up. And this is one that you've been to before, but I've never been here. So I wasn't sure what to make of it. But the first thing I checked out was whether or not it had a vegetable garden. And it does. And I've got to say, I'm really impressed with it. Now, at this time of year, beginning of March, early March, there's not really much going on in the beds. But from an architectural point of view, it is quite stunning. And this is something I'm thinking about a lot more lately. And the aim of this year is to try and make the vegetable garden to look good as well as be productive. So from an aesthetic point of view, let's start in the centre, because this area is circular in design with a octagonal greenhouse right smack bang in the centre. Unfortunately, it's closed for maintenance at the moment, but what we can see inside, there were some avocado trees, there's a cacti tree, there's also strings for when they string up their tomatoes. It's a pretty decent sized greenhouse, I've got to say.
Yeah, I'd say it's absolutely massive. Right, honestly, it takes over quite a big percentage of this allotment, really.
Yeah, I reckon it's probably 20 metres across by 20 metres.
Not your standard greenhouse, let's be honest with you. But I think I can imagine, I mean, there's a lot of space where they've got a field out here. To start off your plants, you're going to need a lot of space to do that with. So that's obviously why it's so big. But I can imagine, especially as we get more into spring, how green that's going to look.
And how much fuller it's going to look as well. It's also unusual being octagonal, but I can see that being a bit of an advantage in terms of light, because it probably allow quite a bit more light in, as well as it being the aesthetics for this garden.
We're right on top of a hill as well, so you know there's no trees that are given any shade or anything. So I can imagine in the summer it gets pretty hot in there.
Now, on the outside, just around the edge of this greenhouse, there are pots with mostly herbs, some of the mints, some of the thymes and rosemaries, but also a few of the trees, olive trees and fig trees I've seen. All in these rather large terracotta pots, which I like terracotta pots. I think they look lovely. They're just very expensive.
Yeah, you mentioned a really good thing earlier, actually, about how the ones inside the greenhouse compared to the ones outside of the greenhouse look at the moment in March.
Yes, I did. Yes, we were noting that inside the greenhouse, as I said, there's some avocado trees, but there's also some of these fig trees and other trees that are inside the greenhouse that have got quite a bit more foliage, quite a bit more leaves on them. The ones outside, not that they're looking dead, but they are just starting to spring into life, which just goes to show how much a greenhouse makes a difference.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I think, you know, if we could all have a greenhouse in our back gardens, we would, wouldn't we? But yeah, I thought it was really interesting to see the difference there.
Now, the actual garden beds themselves. Now, I was trying to describe or think of how I can describe the layout here, because we've got brick paths with the beds in between, and the beds are all pretty much empty. There's a few rhubarb in some. I think we've seen some strawberries as well, but all the beds have been mulched quite thickly with compost. Haven't seen the compost bins here, but I can imagine these are produced on site. But what I did while I was researching before we came here was I had to look at a few videos to see what was going on. And the only way I can describe this layout they have here is like a spider's web, in that the brick paths make the web of the spider's web itself, and it snakes around these beds to produce these. I think they're quite attractive, but it makes it into this circular, as it goes around, a circular shape to really add something quite different.
Yeah, it's a bit like a maze, isn't it? I can imagine when everything's growing, it'd be quite fun to like explore between bits, like you wouldn't see certain areas. And also some of the beds, you've got beds sitting on the floor, you've got raised beds, and then a little bit higher at the back. It makes it a bit interesting. I can imagine that when you've got things growing, there's a lot of height differences going on as well.
Lots of different structures and things like that. Yeah, and I think that does make quite a big difference. But having a circular garden as well, just very different. And then this spider's web is the only way I can describe it, but the spider's web seems to work. Should we ever wander around and see? As I said, we got rhubarb, which at the moment is about the only thing I think that is growing in these, well, probably the annual beds, where they will later on have onions and beans and things like that. There's still signs in place that we can see. But the rhubarb here, I mean, it's looking rather splendid, nice and thick branches. They've actually got some of the rhubarb forces, which are these terracotta pots they put over rhubarb to try and force some early sweet pink stalks on. And also they've snaked around the rhubarb these water soakers. Make sure, I mean, I don't think they need it at the moment because it's so wet. Let's carry on and see what else we can find. There's a raised bed, onion, Stuttgarter, which I can't see any actual onions in it. But all the ground here, because they've mulched it with this compost, is looking incredibly level on the raised beds anyway. But the beds that are on the ground, they've sort of domed it as opposed to laying it level. So it's, as it gets nearer the path, it's not as high as it is in the centre. Again, they're saying they're garlic in these beds, but I can't see them actually growing in here. Chinese artichoke, it says. Skirret, this is what is listed here. I've heard of it, I've tried growing it. But that is starting to spring into life, I guess. I've not really got any experience on that, so I don't know what to add to that. It could be a weed for all I know.
I've not heard of skirret, to be honest with you. That's the first time I've heard of it. One thing that I do enjoy at this time of year is, like you say, there's a lot of areas which are laid bare at the moment, but there are just little green shoots just popping up in different spots, which is quite exciting, I think, for this time of year.
Yeah. Then we've got a type of Caucasian, I don't know how that's pronounced, spinach, which is just, again, I don't know if that is actually the spinach, but it's popping up and showing itself through there. There's a lot of the labels are what they've got here, and there's a lot of interesting labels, which sounds or fills them up with a lot of promise. I can imagine if we come back here in a few weeks' time, it'll look even more full. And if we come back in May, June, July, it will be packed to the brim with a wide variety of different vegetables growing here. I can see there's some strawberries down the back there, which they're looking in pretty good form, it has to be said. I've just potted up a load of strawberries into hanging baskets at home, so this is quite telling. And again, the strawberries are looking really full of life. They really are growing to a decent size. These are about 30 centimetres across, all of them, full of life and looking great.
They look a lot better than my strawberries, I've got to be honest with you. Little thing, you mentioned about strawberries the other day, about how you change your strawberries around from being in the ground to hanging baskets.
No, I keep growing more in hanging baskets now.
Well, you don't put them in the ground?
Don't put them in the ground.
What was the reason again for that?
Because strawberries tend to have a lifespan of about 4 years when they're really productive. So in the first year, they're in the greenhouse at home. Second year, they're outside. Third and fourth year, they're on the allotment. Right. And after that, they go into the compost heap. It's just so I can easily keep track of how old the strawberry plants are and get rid of them when they get that old.
That makes a lot of sense. I've had some people ask me about strawberry plants, saying that they're not producing anymore, and that's the one question I always ask is how old are they?
Yeah.
Because I don't think that's something people really generally know.
No, and it's not until you experiment and try different things that you realise just what's going on. Now, broad beans are in this next bed, and we've noticed this earlier, and we sort of said, so the bed is about 2 metres across, and they've got 4 or 5 broad beans in each row stretching across 2 metres, which we sort of thought, that's quite a bit of space there. It's quite, you know, I would expect to fit at least twice that into a broad bean bed.
Yeah, I'd pack it out a lot more than that. There must be a reason behind it. We also, they've got these string, what would you call that, Rich?
So all around each row, they've put a post in each corner and then tied string around the post to form a rectangle around the rows. And my guess is that's either to support the plants as it grow or scare off birds.
Yeah, I'm really interested to find out. I want to find out what that actually is. I can imagine for birds, it could work. Support, like how broad beans don't get that wide out, do they?
Not really, because I would say these are probably 30 centimetres wide. So I would say they don't really get that wide. I don't know if they're support. I don't know, is my answer. Perhaps people could tell us.
Yeah, if you've ever seen this before, then let us know in the comments.
Now, moving to the outside, I guess you would call this the border of this circular garden. This is where they seem to have more of the perennial plants. One of the things that I noticed is they've got this hedge made out of barberry. Now, I've never heard of barberry before, so I'm just going to read it. The barberry is native to Central and Southern Europe and the Middle East and became naturalised in Northern Europe and North America. They were once a common sight grown in the wild in the UK. However, the plants were systemically eradicated because the berries can harbour wheat rust. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, barberries, I think they're quite sharply acidic, and they can be eaten like as a tart or quite refreshing fruit rich. Like, if you just crush up the dry berries, mix them with a bit of salt, and give them a good rub for lamb, pork, hey even chicken, before grilling, then it really tastes good. Like, I've got a friend in Iran, and the most well-known use in the dish, tahine zuruk.
It's easy for you to say.
Easy for me to say, but in layman's terms, it's a dish of golden saffron rice studded with the berries. So, I'm surprised you've not heard about it, but yeah, we regularly use it ours.
He's not reading it off the label at all. I'm just wondering, so barberry shrubs turn the soil more alkaline where they grow. If you have acidic soils and you want to grow, so they're good for that. But they grow in a wide variety of soils, moisture conditions. It is hardy and produces a lot of small berries that make good food. And it likes full sun. So,
I know you'd love this, though, because it's being used as like decoration for the outside, but it's also edible as well.
Yeah, it's almost forming an edible hedge.
Yeah, I think I love it.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued with that. And then behind those, I've also seen we've got things like black mulberry, rampion. There's probably some apple trees in there and even some bamboo over the far side. So it's kind of making an orchard go around. And I can imagine, again, when this is full, this would really sort of close it in and make it really quite attractive, as well as protect from those strong winds that seem to come across here.
Yeah, like if you look as well, anyway, before they start growing around the edges, the whole allotment is actually in a dip. So that protects it from the wind, because as we know, we've been here, and you may hear on the microphone, can get quite windy at the top of this hill. So by having these little hills going around it, that sort of protects the plants.
Yeah, it's almost like a volcano. We're inside the top of a dormant volcano.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Well, I think we are just about done here. I've mainly been looking from an aesthetic purpose and while making it productive, and I think they've definitely achieved that here. I think we're definitely going to have to come back again when it's more full of life. But I'm really impressed with this. I'm glad I've made the trip up to see this. Thanks so much, Lee.
No, thank you. Let's go and get some cake.
Talking of cake, let's see what Chef Scott has for us this week.
Hi, it's Scott here. And this week, I have the Premier Seeds Direct Seed of the Month recipe. And as you will know from last week's podcast, where Richard gave his advice on how to sow and grow it, it's a summer squash called Zephyr F1. And I was happy to hear what Premier Seeds had chosen for this month, as it's something I've eaten before, and I can confirm it's a lovely squash with a delicate nutty flavour, and can be used very much like courgettes, but I think has much better flavour. And this week's recipe really brings out that flavour. And it is spaghetti with a slow-cooked Zephyr squash sauce with preserved lemons and walnuts. A very simple recipe where we slow-cook squash to create a creamy, fresh-tasting pasta sauce. Perfect for a summer's evening supper. So, let's head to the kitchen and hear how it's made. As always, you can find this recipe and others on the veggrowpodcast.co.uk or on my new Instagram page, Seed to Table Plot 13, where you will find this recipe along with a step-by-step video and other cooking and gardening related posts. This recipe serves four, and you will need 1 kilogram of thinly sliced Zephyr squash or courgettes, 4 cloves of garlic sliced, 1 preserved lemon, just the peel diced, discard the flesh, a pinch of dried chilli flakes, that's optional, 50 grams of chopped walnuts, 10 grams of chopped basil, 10 grams of chopped mint, 2 tablespoons of creme fraiche, 50 grams of grated parmesan, 100 millilitres of olive oil, 400 grams of spaghetti, and salt and pepper. Method. In a saucepan, start by sweating off the garlic in olive oil on a low heat. You don't want to colour the garlic, we just want to infuse the oil with the garlic. This should take a couple of minutes. Now add the chilli if using, followed by the Zephyr squash and preserved lemon. And at this point add a pinch of salt and cook on a medium low heat for 30 to 40 minutes, stirring occasionally. During the cooking, the squash will break down to create a puree. You might need to add a splash of water along the way if you think it's becoming too dry. After 30 to 40 minutes, stir in the creme fraiche and parmesan and basil and mint. Whilst that's happening, cook the pasta as per the packet instructions and drain and reserve some of the cooking water. Now toss the pasta through the squash sauce using a little bit of the cooking water to create the desired creamy consistency. Season with salt and pepper and plate up, garnishing with chopped walnuts and a little bit more parmesan. And that's the recipe done. And that's it from me this week.
Well, what a delicious sounding recipe from Scott once again. And that included our seed of the month, the summer squash Zephyr F1 in collaboration with Premier Seeds Direct. Please do go and check out Premier Seeds Direct. And added to that, if you are looking to buy anything from them, I've negotiated a discount code. Enter VegPod10, all in one word, on your checkout, and you'll get 10% off your order. Please do go and check it out. Details, of course, on the blog post for this podcast. Now, you may hear I am down on the allotment at the moment, and I haven't been down here properly for a couple of weeks, and it's very much a case that everything is just still so wet that trying to do anything down here is just going to be impossible at the moment. We had some good weather over the weekend, which has started to dry things out, and long may it continue. We really do need things to dry out here. However, what has happened while I've been down here, the apple tree that I moved a few weeks ago, it did get blown over, and I rectified that then. Well, it's got blown over once again, so I've rectified that once more. hopefully that's going to be it. It does appear to be budding, so it's clearly is still alive. It's just really got to get those roots anchored into the ground to really stop it from blowing over. It will get there. It just takes a bit of time. I'm going to have a bit of a wander around the allotment and just sort of see what really does need doing. The pear tree at the moment is budding, so that's good. We will probably get pears from that this year. The potato beds are, well, they're empty. They're waiting for their potatoes to go in, as are the brassica beds. We have got a bit of kale and a few leeks still, although some of the kale is being eaten by probably by pigeons, I suspect. So we're making a bit of loss, but we don't worry about that too much. We're feeding nature at the end of the day as well as ourselves, and I think that can be a good thing. In Grandad's greenhouse, the onions are doing okay in there. They could do with being just a little bit bigger, and then I'll be happy to plant those out, but not quite there just yet. I just need them to really get a good boost. May have to start adding a bit of feed to those. Moving on up, rhubarb is really starting to grow now. I don't think it'll be long until we start harvesting rhubarb, believe it or not. Asparagus is showing no signs just yet, but I don't expect it to. But we do need to give that a really good weed. Over into the top half of the pot, we've got some purple sprouting broccoli that we're harvesting. Absolutely delicious stuff. Our broad beans that have been overwintered. We've lost a few this year, actually, but the majority are still there. That gives us a bit of room in that bed to fit in a few more plants. We might have to get some more peas or something in there. The overwintered garlic is looking really good, actually. Starting to get some yellowing on the leaves, however, but I think if we give those a good weed, they should be okay. They just need a bit of time and TLC. And the overwintered onions are also looking pretty good as well. We need to get the rest of the onions, the shallots, in just so we can complete this bed off. Added to that, right at the very top of our allotment, where we have our fruit area, I've dug out a few of the old plants, as you know. I've got to say, it's looking like the red currant bush that we gave a really good prune is really looking good and in plenty of buds. So that has improved tenfold. So I'm happy with that. But we do need to have a big tidy up all down this allotment over the coming weeks before we really start growing on here. As I said, because the ground is just still so wet, I'm struggling to really do anything down here. It would be good to give the grass areas a mow, but we just have to wait. We just have to wait and hope for the best. Spend a bit more time in the evenings down here now. It is getting light and we'll soon be on top of things. Right, I am going to head on back home and I will meet you back in the podding shed. Well, here we are at the end of this week's podcast. I've thoroughly enjoyed this podcast once again, and I hope you have too. If you have, then please do rate and review on your podcast provider. Just want to say once again, if you are looking to buy seeds, please check out premierseedsdirect.co.uk and use VegPod10 for an extra discount. I don't get anything from Premier Seeds Direct apart from that discount code that I've negotiated for you, so please do go check them out. Well, that is it for this week. We will be back again next week with plenty more from the garden and plenty more from the allotment. I look forward to talking to you all about it next week. If you want to get in touch, please do feel free to email me, richard@veggrowerpodcast.co.uk, or you can find me on social media, just search for the Veg Grower Podcast. Give us a like, give us a follow as well at the same time. And also, please feel free to head to theveggrowerpodcast.co.uk, leave us a comment on the bottom of a blog post, or leave us a voicemail. We love having voicemails on this podcast. Right, well, we will be back again next time. So until then, please take care.